Recording in progress.
Good evening and welcome to the July 15th meeting of the Kitsap County Planning Commission. Thank you for your participation. I'd like to start with...
Sorry, we're having a little mic issue. Just one moment.
Not close enough?
Sorry about that, Chair. Please proceed. All right, Alan.
I've got just killing my sound. Welcome to the July 15th meeting of the Kitsap County Planning Commission. I'd like to start with introductions. Can we start on the right?
Good evening, Richard Shattuck from Central Kitsap.
Good evening, Adriana Hampton, Central Kitsap.
David Vliet, North Kitsap.
Alan Beam, Central Kitsap.
Ashley Hall, South Kitsap.
Caleb Nelson, South Kitsap.
Tammy Bowen, North Kitsap.
We also have in attendance today a newly appointed Kathy Messenbaum. She's on virtually. Can you introduce yourself and give us a little background, please, Kathy?
Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I'm Kathy Meisenberg. A bit about me. Professionally, I've been working for the City of Bainbridge Island in the Public Works Department for roughly 27 years. During such time, I spent about 3 years supporting a special planning project focusing on the redesign of the downtown core. I oversaw and managed our department's accreditation through the American Public Works Association, and we became accredited, and I had to craft and adopt and institute over 300 policies and procedures. So that's a little brief overview. With me, I personally live in Brownsville on a little farm. I've been in Central Kitsap for roughly 48 years, and I'm really looking forward to this appointment. So thank you.
Thank you and welcome. This meeting will be a hybrid meeting. The following protocols will be followed. Please silence all electronic devices during the meeting. If attending in person, please refrain from conversations with either other attendees or staff during the meeting. If you wish to make general comments, we have three methods available. First, for virtual attendees, raise your hand at the appropriate time using the raise hand button at the bottom of the Zoom window. Your name will be called and your microphone will be unmuted. Second, call-in attendees can signal by pressing *9 on their keypad. The last four digits of your phone number will be called and you will be connected. You may need to dial *6 to unmute your phone. Third, written comments and testimony can be submitted to staff or emailed to cjewel@kitsap.gov by 2 p.m. of the day prior to the meeting. Please indicate the date of the meeting and the comments are meant for, your name, the agenda item and subject that you're addressing. The submitted comments will then be entered into the record at the appropriate time. For all speakers, please state your name, the general area in which you live. Comments are normally limited to 2 minutes for general public comments and 3 minutes for a public hearing. These times are adjustable by the chair when appropriate. First item of business is adoption of the agenda.
I move to adopt the agenda as presented.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor? The meeting is, agenda is adopted. We have the minutes for the June 3rd in front of us. Do I have any recommendations?
I'm going to be abstaining this evening from adopting those minutes. So, and someone else should make the motion.
I motion to approve the agenda from the 6-3 commission meeting.
Minutes.
I apologize. 6-3 minutes from commission meeting.
Second.
Do we have any discussion or comments on the minutes? Hearing none. Can I have a vote for acceptance of the minutes? Richard Shattuck and I are abstaining, one, because I wasn't there. And the minutes for the June 3rd meeting pass. That brings us to the general comment period, the first general comment period. Do we have any audience comments? Seeing none from the audience, do we have any virtual attendees comments?
No virtual meeting comments.
That was easy. I'll close the general comment period number one. That brings us to the briefing on the sanitary constructions update.
Good evening, commissioners. I'm new to this. Bear with me. Do I have control of the clicker? I do. Okay. Well, again, good evening, commissioners. My name is Anthony Burgess. I am an engineer, capital projects manager with the Public Works Sewer Utility Division. This is our briefing for the 2025 standards for sanitary sewer construction. It's an update. So I'll be going over what that will encompass at a high level and outline the schedule this evening for what's to come and how often you'll get to know me over the coming months. So these slides are a bit dense, but there's only a few of them, and I'll try to be brief regarding it. So what are the standards for sanitary sewer construction? These standards build on other established requirements from agencies like the Washington State Department of Transportation and Department of Ecology. These standards modify those requirements as necessary to suit the specific needs of the Public Works Division, specifically the sewer utility. Every jurisdiction has their own flavor of those standards and their own industry requirements. These standards dictate the means and methods for sanitary sewer construction for all development types within the county in our four sewer service areas. We manage the sewer systems within Manchester, Central Kitsap, Kingston, and the Suquamish boundaries. There's a mix of Lamrud boundaries for Suquamish and urban growth areas for the other three. These are requirements for gravity lines and structures, pressurized sewer lines, lift stations, specifically developer lift stations. Our larger lift stations that are more regional, those standards will be dictated by the specific project at hand. That's handled through a capital project design method. This document also includes policies for easements, dedication of infrastructure, and where the designation of public and private utilities are, among a few others that we'll get into later in the process. And this is used as a resource for consistent expectations for all developers and design professionals. So why the update? Our sewer has not had a comprehensive update to these standards in many, many years. I could add many more many's to frame how long it's been. The requirements currently are not easily understood and difficult to locate. Some requirements are seen as barriers to development, and many of the requirements are not consistent with current construction practices. And several policy changes have occurred, which are now being reflected in these standards. So I want to frame how we're approaching this. I'm calling it an update in two parts. Priority one is our jurisdiction means and methods. These are industry-specific requirements that are not meant to be open for exhaustive public deliberation. specifically because these correlate directly to system operation, maintenance safety, and ensure the longevity of public infrastructure. We can talk about those specifics as questions come up. Our hope is that we don't spend the majority of our discussion time on those topics, and we look more towards priority two. Essentially, there's a great deal of information within the document that should be adopted as written. Priority two is focusing on the development issues. So these are new or expanded ideas, which are discretionary and change jurisdiction to jurisdiction. The specific development regulations include policies or other allowances that are not outright covered in Department of Transportation or Ecology guidance documents. Each topic will be discussed thoroughly within the upcoming work study or work studies. These standards have been shared and presented to the Kitsap Builders Association. At a very high level, I brought forward what those policy changes are last Thursday. Had some great discussion, which we'll include in our public comment record. And I am expecting some feedback from them to include as part of our presentation materials for the first workshop. They are going to be our most vocal group as part of this process, and as such, we wanted to have some proactive discussion with them. So the schedule, we have two options, one schedule with two work studies, one schedule with one work study. I'm not looking for a decision this evening, but once we have that first work study, I would like to understand if we need to have a second one or not. It changes when we can move forward with the public hearing, deliberations, finding of fact, and then when I move the process forward to the Board of County Commissioners. And this is just outlining what those dates look like. Depending on what we can cover in that first work study, I am asking for quite a bit of time so that we can have some good discussion and I can hear your thoughts and we can work through that. Again, a very brief presentation. I wanted to give the allotment of time to you to ask questions, any that you have now.
This is some significant policy change in direction, or you're seeking a lot of input from the development community. Isn't this a pretty short time frame to try to get meaningful review of what you're putting out? It looks to me like you're going to give the building group about 3 weeks to say, hey, tell us everything you need us to know, and then we're going to present it in a work study to the Planning Commission. So why the tight timeline?
Part of it is a lot of the policies are longstanding asks or discussion points from the Kitsap Builders Association. We've been tracking those topics diligently for several years. Part of the tight time frame is so that we can change the majority of the means and methods to be current with construction practices. There's a good deal of confusion between what is in our previous standards and what we're moving towards today. And the majority of that has to do with safety and maintenance. You are correct. The policies are on an accelerated time frame, but we've done our best to discuss those with the KBA. They were given materials an additional 2 week or week and a half before the meeting date. We do have two work studies, so if we get meaningful comment that needs more time to get into those details, we have another work study within the schedule to take advantage of that.
Other questions?
I have a couple. First of all, what isn't working now? What's driving this change? Do we have regulations that we're not following? What's not working?
Great question. One good example, and this is very technical, we allow currently in the standards the use of pea gravel, which is a very clean, round rock for backfill. That's really not appropriate for sewer main installation. It causes a lot of maintenance issues down the road. We are working with developers on a case-by-case basis to steer them away from that. We would love to be able to point to the standard and give them clear expectations so they don't have to ask. That's just one example. Okay. In terms of changing regulation from either WSDOT or Ecology, I wouldn't say we're faced with a critical issue we have to overcome. but there are several instances of inconsistencies where we still have an older document which is in conflict with those current practices.
It would be useful for us if we know which things are regulations that we have to do. They should be highlighted. You didn't mention Silverdale when you talked about areas. Silverdale has a sewer, and last time I checked.
Silverdale's within our central service area. So the central service area covers Silverdale, part of East Bremerton, not in the Bremerton city limits. And it also handles the flow from naval bases, Bangor, Keyport, and the city of Polk.
So those will be covered then?
Yes, yes.
And then the last question is Purple Pipe. Who does that? Is that you or is that somebody else?
Purple Pipe, the only purveyor in the area I'm aware of that installs that is Silverdale Water. We will not be covering those standards in this document. We are not the purveyor that manages that system.
Who does?
Silverdale Water does.
It's not a waste product?
It's not turned on yet.
Okay, we'll have further discussion on that. Any other questions? Yes, ma'am.
Thanks, Anthony, for your briefing this evening.
Yeah.
I was curious if you could just provide some high-level examples for Priority 1. What does jurisdiction means and methods?
This is when you install a sewer main that is 10 feet or less, the typical easement width is 15 feet. That easement width has never changed in our standards, which creates issues for us when sewer is 20 feet deep. Now it's very difficult to replace that pipe. We want to plan for ideal reconstruction scenarios when we can to ensure the safety and longevity of our infrastructure. The majority of Priority 1 is focused around how we maintain and eventually replace our infrastructure that's constructed. Yeah, great question.
Other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Can I respond to your recycled water question real quick?
Yes, please.
So recycled water, or Purple Pipe, is an endeavor that the county has acted upon with Silverdale Water. It's a joint effort where our central Kitsap facility in Brownsville would be the producer. Silverdale Water would be the distributor. There is an effort to create a recycled water master plan that is discussed in the comp plan. It's reiterated in our general sewer plan, and it will identify the gaps in the process and likely answer all of your questions. But that is not specifically covered in this document because this document is geared towards benefiting the development community. When it comes to our plants and lift stations that are existing, we take a look at those from a capital design and construction lens.
Since this is a new and emerging subject,
mm-hmm.
I would think that it would be appropriate to at least give us an introductory brief on what it is and where it is and how it works so that we can fit that into this whole thing.
We can provide a brief, but this document will not cover recycled water at all. It's not meant to.
Why not?
The way that will work is we will be the provider of Class A recycled water. We will have an independent permit with the Department of Ecology, and then there will be a transition point, which will be Silverdale Water's authority to then manage, and they will manage directly how that infrastructure is expanded, managed and maintained and replaced. Our only responsibility is at the treatment plant, delivering up to that transition point. This document, again, is for the development community who are designing and constructing the new neighborhoods or apartment buildings within the community. If there is a requirement for recycled water in the Silverdale area, that is something that the Silverdale Water District would require within their own development standards.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
Wonderful. I look forward to seeing you again.
Thank you. Next on the agenda is the Year of the Rural.
Good evening, commissioners. Thank you for having me this evening. I'm here tonight to provide an update on the Year of the Rural, but more specifically on the public process that will be kicking off in September. And my name is Heather Cleveland. I'm a long-range planner with Kitsap County Department of Community Development. So an overview of the public process, or in what I'll cover today in my brief presentation, are the requirements, so what's required of us. Also the different components of the public process, the different roles, and then also the proposed schedule. I'll also say, too, this is with respect to the Year of the Rural and the three deliverables that we have. And as a reminder, those three deliverables are the Rural and Resource Lands Chapter Update, which is part of the Comprehensive Plan, potential code updates, and also reclassification request recommendations. Those are the three deliverables that this public process applies to. So with respect to the required public process, that relates to the State Environmental Policy Act, also known as SEPA, RCW 3670A106, that applies to comprehensive plans specifically. So the reason why some of these things are required is because this is specifically a comprehensive plan update. The Rural and Resource Lands Chapter is a chapter of the comprehensive plan. And then also our county code, Chapter 2108. So the State Environmental Policy Act, SEPA. So the state SEPA process identifies and analyzes environmental impacts and associated with governmental decisions. These decisions may be related to issuing permits for private projects, constructing facilities, or, in our case, adopting regulations, policies, and plans. So for us, a final, and as a reminder to some, but some folks may not know, as part of our comprehensive plan process that was adopted in December of 2024, there was a final environmental impact statement that was adopted. And so with that, what we'll be looking at is either non-project actions or an addendum. We'll work over the next 6 weeks to determine which of those paths that we go down. But either way, there was an environmental impact statement that was already completed. And I will, so it depends on the amount of changes that we're proposing, which path that we go down. So another part of our process is transmittal to the state. So each county and city proposing adoption of a comprehensive plan or development regulations under this chapter shall notify the department of its intent to adopt such plan or regulations at least 60 days prior to final adoption. So when we publish our draft, that kicks off this public process, we'll be submitting that to the state as part of our process. And then we go through our several months, and then 10 days, and we're working towards adoption in December, and then we submit the final adoption 10 days, or within 10 days after that adoption in December. Another important part of the process, although it doesn't have specifics, but it is an important part of the process to all of us, is the public participation along with notice provision. So public participation process should include ways to let people know about the proposed changes to the comprehensive plans or development rules. This can include things like publishing notices in the newspaper and sending out targeted notifications to people, groups, and agencies that might be affected. So all of those steps is part of our process that's built into the county based on state requirements. So for the Kitsap County Code, Chapter 2108, the legislative action procedures, so a staff report and drafts will be available a minimum of 10 days before the first public hearing. That's important. We'll be publishing this on September 2nd, and that is within that time frame before the public hearing, which is an important part of this process, where you'll have public testimony and be able to hear what folks think who've had a chance to review our drafts can provide feedback to us and to you. We'll have at least one public hearing. In looking back to how this process went for the comprehensive plan, which was a significant effort, there were multiple public hearings. And just as Anthony had mentioned earlier, sometimes you build in time for potentially more things, so we'll take that as it goes if we need more than one public hearing. And also, notice of hearing is 15 days in advance, and along with that, required of us is binding and recommendations. Review and decisions, so this is part of the Planning Commission process, and then the next part of the process is we'll go to the Board of County Commissioners, so we'll hold work studies with them. We'll also have another public hearing with them, but that will be after the deliberations, recommendations, and findings of fact that are recommended by the Planning Commission, and then ultimately a final decision in December. The rules, so the public, important part of this, and they have been an important part of this in our process from the beginning of this project. We've conducted outreach events, we've had multiple surveys, we conducted interviews, but the part that's required of us is, you know, with respect to the public, is this the testimony and the public comment that will kick off in September, and that feedback is important to us. I was just mentioning earlier when I was chatting with Anthony, when some of the feedback was given, for example, to the tree canopy code, those were comments that we then incorporated, so it's an important part of this process to hear, continue to hear what folks have to say. The staff, so our role in this is to prepare, present, review, and compile the comments and recommendations. So in part of the process, which I know you just went through that with the PROS plan, so all these are very similar, we'll be compiling those comments for you, including a table, a matrix, which I also found to be really helpful, and including a column of, like, what does this pertain to? Because, you know, I will say when it was with the comprehensive plan, there were many, many things, but hopefully this will be a bit more consolidated. And then your role in this is to review, listen, comment, question, and then also make recommendations. So part of our process will be, after the work studies, will be deliberations. So we will have a table, and I found this to be a very useful tool in the comprehensive plan, where we organize those feedbacks, the high-level themes of those, our reaction to those, and then at the end of it, what are your recommendations that will then go to the Board of County Commissioners. And then I also mentioned, so similar role for the Board of County Commissioners. So what I consider the draft in September, I'm calling that 60%. It will be fully laid out, but also adaptable. Change things, add things, remove things based on what we're all hearing. But when we move to, and then we'll have our hearing with the Board of County Commissioners, have multiple deliberations with them, depending on how much changes and how much tension there is. But by the time that we're moving towards adoption, things will start to solidify and hopefully working towards crossing the finish line and adopting. But I will say that 60% in September, and then what we're calling for the Board of County Commissioners is a 90% draft, having incorporated everything that we've heard. And also, it not being the first time anyone has heard any of this, hopefully. And then finally, I had mentioned earlier the state's role in this is the review and certification by the state. So here's our tentative timeline for what's coming up, and we're still working on solidifying these dates, but this was, in presenting to you, is also helpful to me to back out of what this might look like. So the next briefing that I will give will be more project specific that will lead up to that. So it'll include the three deliverables, where we're at with it. It won't be the final, but it's kind of the preview then for what you're going to see then in September with respect to the updated rural and resource lands chapter, potential code updates. You won't see strikeouts at that time, but come September, when it comes to code updates, that's when you're going to start to see those strikeouts. But in the August briefing, it'll be fairly high level, and these are the things that we're looking at and probably continuing to assess and receive feedback. And then September 2nd, again, that's when the drafts will be published. We will promote this through Gov Delivery on our website and also other ways as well, social media. And then the 30-day comment period will kick off, so that's when we'll have that official, those official opportunities. And so when folks submit those comments, those will be published publicly. So, and I let people know if you like something that we're proposing, please let us know that too, because we would want to move forward with those things. And then, as I mentioned earlier, we'll have a work study in the hearing. So that's an opportunity for discussion, ask questions. And if we can't answer everything at that time, we will compile that into a deliberations table for us to do more research. We're not always going to be able to answer everything at that time. continued to deliberations, findings of fact, and then, as I mentioned earlier, moving on to the Board of County Commissioners hearing in November, and then finally working towards adoption on potentially on December 8th if everything moves forward the way that we hope. Any questions about our public process for the Year of the Rural Project?
Heather, you mentioned at the start of your presentation that one of our responsibilities for this process was to take a look at land use redesignation requests. And as I understand, the commissioners have made a decision not to consider redesignation requests during this process. Can you tell me where we are in terms of expectations for that?
There are three that are still remaining. So there were 17 originally, and 14 of those were removed from the docket. No further consideration, but three are continuing. So you'll receive our recommendations about those in September. And those are all, the requests that were removed were related to residential, but the requests that remain are related to rural industrial or rural commercial requests.
Just a quick follow-up, if I could. What kind of feedback are we getting from people, particularly with the Rainier proposal? And I know the community, at least what appeared to be half of the community, was very excited about that proposal. Are we getting feedback on that? Should we expect as a commission to hear about that during the public hearing?
No, not about that application specifically because it's been removed. However, I will say that in reviewing those applications, you will see in the chapter reflection of the concerns that we've heard. For example, a potential analysis, a rural lands analysis in the future. So some things that couldn't be solved in 2025, we will lift up, and hopefully we'll see that reflected in proposed goals, policies, and strategies moving forward to help us move forward with a balance of development and preservation at the same time. So those are the kind of things that were prompted and that you will see represented in the chapter. Again, not able to accomplish it. Another thing that was brought up through that specific application was the need for recreation facilities. So you'll see that acknowledged too, but not fully addressed, but acknowledged that that was something that we heard from multiple constituents.
Other questions? I have a couple. We've been, for the last 2-3 years, delving deeply into the UGAs and the urban. We feel that we have some familiarity with that. This is our first real big introduction into rural. Mm-hmm. My first question is, who are the rural stakeholders? Are the agriculture, the timber, the mining, the conservation groups? What kind of outreach are we doing to the stakeholders at the beginning of this process?
So we've done outreach to those groups. There, with respect to agriculture, it was directed by the Board of County Commissioners to form an agriculture working group steering committee, and that was formed. And so I would say agriculture has been a priority, and there have been discussions. They've made proposals and specific recommendations that we are considering and that you will see represented in the drafts that you see in September. With respect to forestry, I've conducted interviews with folks about that. We've also heard from timber business owners through the reclassification requests, but also I think part of that too is you'll see in our recommendations is more work needs to be done. If our timber industry is changing, we need to recognize that and have a focused effort for continued conversations about that. With respect to mineral resources, we have had some interviews with that, but similar to the work that we've done, our focus has been very urban and this is rural, and I truly feel like within this year we're scratching the surface of it. And so what you'll see up is us pointing us in the right direction for work moving forward in the next 20 years. So it won't be like this is our priorities and this is what we've heard, but also this is how we need to continue to evaluate it. And then with respect to connecting with the rural communities, we've had opportunities for survey. I've done significant outreach with groups, also the CACs, and continue to do outreach and meet with folks throughout this whole process. So I guess who is rural? It's the people who live in rural, but also the people that are looking to do business in rural are the folks that we've been engaging with.
It's when we were doing the critical areas ordinance and all the others, we had actually stakeholder meetings and help that had active participation in drafting the future documents. I would think that might be an appropriate thing to look at for public outreach for the rural.
Yes, and it has been specifically with the agricultural community. And work, our recommendation is work to be continued.
Yeah, I would recommend that you make sure that when you come forward with the programs, that's highlighted.
So acknowledge the outreach?
Yes.
Okay.
Other questions? Yes.
Thank you, Heather, for the update. I was just going to mention I had the opportunity to attend one of the community workshops held at the fairgrounds, and just wanted to say the GCD staff did an incredible job. All the seats in the room were full of neighbors speaking their concerns, and it was a robust discussion. So thank you, staff, for facilitating that conversation.
Thank you, and thank you for attending. And I'll add to that, a big part of this is rural character and what is rural character to Kitsap County, and that was a big part of our effort in all of our surveys and in our outreach, and also acknowledging what tensions we have in Kitsap County. And we had great discussions.
Yeah, I'll just kind of jump on the back of that and say I really appreciated all the county discussions and availability to meet with constituents who live in the rural like myself. And I think the county has done a very good job about making themselves available to anybody who wanted to participate. And the meetings that I attended were very well done, very informative. So I think staff's done a great job in kind of, you know, setting aside this rural in this year. I'm glad they decided to do it like that, to give it its due. And they have been making themselves available. So thanks for those great discussions that they're having and taking in all aspects of rural character.
Thank you.
Doing this. Thank you.
Further comments? Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda is battery storage, energy storage systems.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Jim Rogers with the Department of Community Development, Long Range Planning, and I'm going to give you just a quick briefing about the battery energy storage system moratorium that was recently imposed. Got just a brief presentation here for you to go along with the items in your packet. I believe you have a copy of the moratorium and a copy of the work plan. So the, let's see, it's working. There we go. So where we are today and kind of where we're going, on June 11th, the county commissioners adopted a 365-day moratorium on the acceptance of new battery energy storage system applications and declaring an emergency. That ordinance is 639-2025, and you have a copy of that in your packet. Last night, a public hearing was held with the Board of County Commissioners on that, and we received comments. Those comments were largely positive and in favor of the moratorium. We did have one comment from Puget Sound Energy, and they highlighted the need for these systems to help them meet their clean energy goals in the future, very near future. And they just highlighted the importance of providing these battery systems as a part of their resilience of their energy network. Then we talked a little bit about the work plan, and I'll go over that a little bit in just a moment. And then finally, we'll work through that work plan this year, bring to you as often as you'd like updates on this project, and hopefully come to you in March or April timeframe for your recommendations to bring to the board for adoption in May. We have until June 10th to complete this, but we're going to try and wrap it up a little early if we can. So real briefly, the work plan goals are to identify and understand the issues with these battery systems, identify appropriate solutions, update county code to reflect you know, potential code updates for building standards, Planning Commission recommendations and the Board of County Commissioners' decision in May. The preliminary issues are fire safety and emergency response, environmental impacts, including noise, zoning regulations, and economic impacts and financial surety. Some of the work plan tasks are to identify the risks, identify land use and environmental impacts, look at emergency response requirements, understanding the Department of Ecology guidance, which is currently under development. They hope to have that done here by the end of this year. Also understanding some new state regulations in regard to clean energy siting. That's House Bill 1216. And then a recent WAC that was just adopted for fire safety and emergency response plans for these battery energy storage systems. We also want to understand better Puget Sound Energy safety and reliability requirements for these systems. And what are the potential economic impacts to our citizens in our county? And then we also would like to have some financial commitments for these projects from cradle to grave. So when they're decommissioned, that there's a financial commitment to deal with that appropriately. And that is it in a nutshell. We did recently just create a website for this project. So if anybody wants to get on our county's website, if you just search for BESS, you'll find our battery energy storage systems website. And there are contact information there that comes to me for any comments or questions.
Thank you, Jim, for that presentation. I think we've heard that there's one BESS being considered that was before the moratorium. Can you kind of like explain approximately where that is? Or are you able to, is the county able to talk about that or not?
Yeah, it's a project that's currently being going through the process, and it's up in North Kitsap along Bond Road, I believe, up there in the north end, next to a substation. I believe it's a 170 megawatt system on a 15-acre property, two properties totaling 17 acres, I believe, actually. The system itself, I think, is proposed to be around 8 to 10 acres of that property, so it's a pretty good-sized system. And it's, like I said, it's located right next to a substation, so they don't have to build a lot of excessive high power transmission lines to get power to and from the system to the batteries. Not sure what else I can say about that, or you have any other questions about that one particularly?
How does noticing for these BESS systems work? Is that in the code? Like, who gets notified? Yeah. Is it just property owners that are abutting it, or does it go out a certain amount? Or
yeah, I think it's right now it's 800 feet from the properties involved, so it's just like any other land use change or any project proposal at this point.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Jim, are you the person honchoing this, or are we going to have a consultant on board? How are we?
For the moratorium? Yeah, for the moratorium, it's me and Scott Diener in our department.
What are the current zoning like regulations that you think would apply to this type of?
So these types of systems are currently allowed in industrial areas, in industrial zones. They are not currently permitted outright in residential zones, and so the site that's currently under review is being proposed in a rural residential zone.
Thanks again, Jim, for the briefing on this. I have a couple questions. First, I was wondering, so the work that the Department of Ecology is doing, is that also going to take into account like a health impact analysis? Or I'm just trying to think how people come into this in addition to our environment.
Yeah, so that's one of the concerns, is that putting these things in rural areas or in residential areas might not be appropriate. And so we want to study that a little bit more. Ecology is going to come out with some guidance to help us with that. Other jurisdictions in the state and around the country are wrestling with the same issue. I think there's over 37 or more active moratoriums right now across the United States for these systems. It's a brand new technology that's coming out, and jurisdictions don't know quite how to handle it yet. So we're getting on that bandwagon to figure out how to best handle that, look at what zones it would be appropriate in, and if it has to be allowed in every zone, what can we do to help mitigate the impacts to the environment and the people. So fire smoke, emergency response, noise complaints possibly. There are a number of environmental impacts that we're going to be looking at.
Thank you. And then can the moratorium be extended if the team finds that they need more time for that analysis?
Yes, we have 1 year. We have until June 10th of 2026. But if we can't get it done it's felt like there's a need to extend it for some reason, for more research or whatever the pertinent, a reasoning is, it can be extended. Yeah.
Yes. What is the impact of the Puget Sound Energy clean energy goals on the decision for these sitings?
Yeah, so Puget Sound Energy has to get to a point where they have two or three goals right now that they're working toward. I believe it's in 2025. So this year they're taking offline all of their coal generation for electricity. And so by 2030, I think they have to be carbon neutral. And so they're working towards developing these battery energy storage systems to help for system resiliency. What it allows them to do is store energy in the night times or the off peaks when the wind's not blowing or solar's not generating, so they can store energy and then use it in other times or use it in peak demand times. So it provides them with a lot of resilience and some green energy storage, backup storage. And so they're looking to install these and get to a carbon neutral system for their system by 2030, and I think they have a 2045 goal of being completely green energy. So, and then those are state laws that they're trying to meet those goals.
Has Puget Sound Energy told you what the magnitude of this problem is? How many they projecting they're going to need?
They haven't given us a number.
You're just starting the study.
Yeah, right. They haven't given us a number yet. They put out RFPs for different companies to come up with these systems and propose where they should go. Puget Sound Energy, I asked them if they were looking at Kitsap County for, two systems or 20, and they said closer to two. So that's kind of where we're left. We don't know exactly how many they're looking for in the county yet.
With all these new electric cars going in and battery systems being installed in the garages of houses, I understand that's a smaller problem, but for fire, that could be huge.
Yes, I'm not sure how they're handling that. Right now, there are a lot of charging systems in homes today, so I'm not sure how those are handled under the fire code currently.
You see in the news these Tesla fires that are going, and it's not pretty.
Right. Yep.
Will you extend your look down to that level, or are you just up here in the upper ones?
We're looking at the bigger systems right now because that's the impact in front of us, and that's the unknown in front of us. So. Yeah, we're not going down to the individual homeowner's level.
Are there any other stakeholders other than PSE?
Not at this time.
Other questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good luck.
Thanks. I'm going to need it. We're moving right along in time here. So
the next briefing is on Silverdale Center's plan. You get to do that one, too?
I do.
Congratulations.
This one's actually a fun project, so. So here we'd just like to update you on some of the outreach efforts that we have been working on the Silverdale Regional Center plan. And I'm going to give you a brief overview of the project, our outreach efforts to date, and talk a little bit about next steps and the timeline. So project overview, the Silverdale Center plan was updated during the comprehensive plan update in 2024. But it was realized that more detail was needed in the downtown area, especially when it comes to mixed-use development and public investments, transportation investments and design standards and things like that. And the evolution of Silverdale Regional Center into a more 24/7 urban community is also one of the key aspects of the county and also the regional growth strategy. So when we talk about the regional growth strategy, we're talking about PSRC. The region has 30 regional growth centers. We have two in Kitsap County, one in Bremerton, and one in Silverdale. PSRC's Vision 2050 is the regional growth strategy for the area. And one of the requirements is that we have a mix of uses and activities connected by efficient transportation in those centers. And another part of the growth strategy is that 65% of our urban growth be directed into centers. One thing we did in our comprehensive plan update was really update our capacities in the urban growth area. We reduced density limits and increased height limits in some places, particularly in the centers, to help accommodate that extra growth in the center. So one of the reasons that we need to do this plan is to make sure that PSRC recognizes or continues to recognize the Silverdale Center as a regional center. One of those reasons is that we get a lot of federal transportation funding through PSRC to Silverdale Center. That center alone gets about $2.5 million every year. For transportation funding, so that's a pretty big one. So we're going to be coordinating with PSRC and with Public Works, obviously, for transportation projects. We've recently completed a market study that has assisted with our application to PSRC, and we've submitted that application at this point. What this Silverdale Center plan will do is supplement that application. Puget Sound Regional Council will make a decision on the center status at the end of the year. So for our center, the standard is that we must have 18 activity units per acre. That's the density that PSRC is looking for centers. And we should be targeting 45 activity units per acre for densities in 2044. Now, an activity unit is either a person that lives in the center or a job that's located in the center. So when you add those up and you come to either, hopefully, 18 activity units per acre as the density. As of 2024, Silverdale had 17.3 active density, and that consisted of almost 80% employees and about 20% residential. So one of the goals of PSRC and centers is to have a more balanced mix there, more closer to 50-50 if we can get to there. So as you can see, we're a little out of skew. There's a lot of employees in Silverdale, but very few people live in the downtown area there. Our new estimates show that we have a planned target of 46.2 or more by 2044. So we definitely have the planned target activity units of 45 activity units. It looks like we have that in our future. So we're in good shape there, I believe. For the vision and opportunities, what's working and what's not, this is what we're trying to find out in our center plan. Where do we see the center in 5, 10, 15, or 20 years? Who will it be for? What kind of investments do we want to make, and what should come first? And so part of that process is figuring that out is going to the public and going to our stakeholders groups and figuring out what the vision is for the Silverdale Center. The vision was last updated in 2006. A lot has changed since then, and so we wanted to come back out to the public and make sure that we understood the current vision. We also want to know where we should prioritize investments in streets, parks, and public spaces. What types of development do we want for local businesses, housing, and community spaces? And what funding, policies, and incentives and partnerships are needed to bring our vision to life? So what kind of incentives can we, or barriers can we take down to the type of development that we want? How do we clearly translate our development vision to everyone inside and outside the community to make sure everyone understands it? What design standards and policies can guide future development while staying flexible? And how do we make sure that the guidelines support great ideas without limiting what's possible? So there's three parts: the vision and opportunities, and then the regional center plan, and then the third part will be updated design standards. A little bit about the scope of work. We've hired a Burke Consulting, and they're partnering with Seth Harry and Associates and Parametrics for some of the work. There's a project management and coordination part of the plan. They're going to do some plan review and analysis for us. We're holding public workshops, stakeholder workshops, again, doing visioning, coming up with conceptual plans for the city, and design guidelines, and then eventually the development code. So Burke is the lead planning agency on this. Seth Harry and Associates, they are the architects and design engineers, and Parametrics is working primarily on transportation and non-motorized. So part of our community engagement plan, it was to foster positive engagement, gather community feedback, understand the impacts of the plan, confirm that the vision is still spot on or if we need to make changes, and make meaningful decisions. We started with the CKCC subcommittee, and we built on that subcommittee for our stakeholders, including the Port of Silverdale, the Senior Center, schools, emergency services, Kitsap Transit, business owners, developers, nonprofits, and others. We've been holding workshops. We held public workshop number one, which is all about visioning, and we did a public visioning survey. Got a lot of good responses, and I'll show you some of those in a minute. We also did a stakeholder workshop just a couple weeks ago, also looking at the vision and coming up with concepts for Silverdale. Public workshop number two, we'll take a look at those concepts, fine-tune them a little bit, and look at some potential design strategies. And then stakeholder workshop number two, later on this summer, we'll look at design standards and development types. So we're advancing these with every step of the way here. One of the first outreaches we did was a public workshop. It was virtual, and this was the visioning exercise. We had 27 members of the public. We did some interactive polling with them, did some small breakout group discussions, talked about commercial development, housing, third places, and mobility and connectivity issues. One of the breakout, this is an example of one of the discussion boards at one of the breakout sessions, talked about what types of commercial development and services that people would like to see more of in the Silverdale area or less of. And so there was kind of a dot exercise and posting notes and making comments on the different types of commercial developments that they want to see. Largely, people wanted to see more small mom-and-pop the shops and less big box stores, and less car-centric uses like drive-through facilities, things like that, and more smaller-scale places. Some of the breakout group highlights, mixed opinions on big box stores. They're convenient, but they lack character. They desire for more workforce and senior housing, strong support for public spaces, community venues, and small parks, like pocket parks, interest in enhancing pedestrian and bicycle infrastructure, strong desire for a ferry connection. There's been a lot of talk about potential foot ferry from Silverdale to Bremerton. Kitsap Transit's actually doing a study, a feasibility study on that right now, so we'll see how that comes out. The concerns about parking availability and design, also interest in improved Old Mill Park amenities. Silverdale Way is seen as a barrier and needs to be more friendly and more walkable. And a desire to enhance existing assets in the city. There's support for 3 to 5 story buildings in the downtown core, but view protection is a concern, so limiting those heights in areas where that's appropriate is also expressed. There's a good desire for mixed-use development and support for local businesses, like I said earlier. Stormwater management was noted as a priority and a potential barrier for a lot of development, so we're certainly going to be working with the county on ways to help hopefully reduce that barrier. Excessive parking remains a concern. There's a lot of parking in Silverdale that's not being used and is ripe for potential mixed-use development. Strong community value on the waterfront and growing opportunities there. There's interest in multi-generational housing for both seniors and youth, and discussions about reimagining the mall space, referencing Totem Lake as a model, potentially. We did, like I said, did a public survey outside of this public meeting. We got 131 responses. Some of the current strengths were identified as the natural beauty, including the waterfront and scenic views. It's located centrally in Kitsap County. It was an asset. And services and businesses, including healthcare and medical services, and a variety of shopping and dining options were all seen as strengths. Some of the opportunities for improvement were identified as making walking and biking more comfortable, especially accessibility for people with mobility limitations, and functional streets for businesses. Traffic, roads, car-centric characteristics, and inadequate transit, walkability, bike infrastructure again, and then a lack of character or placemaking. There isn't really a lot of identifiable places in Silverdale other than the old town that has a lot of character, I should say. The vision for the future. Build on the center's existing strengths in the environment, parks and recreation, integrate nature into the urban environment while preserving it for future generations, improve community gathering spaces and cultural event places, and more parks and green spaces, public and farmers markets, local shops and restaurants, or even food trucks. So when we surveyed the public and looked at how their vision aligns with the vision that we had imagined and that we had stated in the comprehensive plan. When it comes to their housing vision, they support diversity of housing, recreation, and community amenities for self-sustaining community. Economic development, there's also strong support for fostering development through incentives and public-private partnerships. The environmental vision was very strong, integrate nature into the urban environment. Mobility and connectivity, to create a multimodal transportation system accessible without a personal vehicle. There was a strong relation there, strong alignment of that vision as well. And urban design and vision, inspire a healthy, connected urban community where people come first. and then the overall vision of the center to become a livable, sustainable, balanced, mixed-use urban area serving residents, employees, and visitors. As you can see, the majority of the people taking the survey largely aligned with the vision statements as they were. Then we went to a stakeholder workshop. This was just June 26th. We held a workshop, and that workshop included two key sessions that focused on building consensus around a shared development framework, and that was, again, aligning with that vision that we worked on earlier, identifying priority projects and sites for public investments, mapping future opportunities for development, multimodal connections and open space, defining appropriate development types for key opportunity areas, and incorporating findings from the market study, community feedback, and other related initiatives. So we kicked off that workshop with an overview it was a two-session workshop. We had a session in the morning, took a long break in the middle, and then had a session in the afternoon. So we started out with just an overview, and then we broke it up into our different work groups by topic. The three work groups were, one of them covered transportation, connectivity, and stormwater. The second group was housing, commercial, infill, and redevelopment, urban form. And then public spaces, parks, and environment. The consultants, after that session, the consultants took all those concepts and discussion points and went to work for several hours in the midday visualizing and summarizing those concepts. Then later in the afternoon, the group came back to work, and we worked on building those concepts, fine-tuning them, looking at them on boards, taking into account where everybody was thinking different kinds of development should happen, where should housing go, where should public facilities go, coming up with different concepts, looking at connections in different places where redevelopment or mixed use could happen, making use of those big parking lots that aren't being used. Took a look at some of all of the concept of a ferry, the concept of using Clear Creek as a spine route through the area and connecting to that from the different sides, east and west corridors and connectors between the hospital and the mall and the schools and Old Town, just all these concepts coming together. And again, same concepts with the bike, walk and bike network, looking at trail-oriented development as a concept. One of those concepts has actually started being built. The Rivulet development in Silverdale along Clear Creek is one example of an apartment complex geared or facing the creek. And so it's creek/trail-oriented development. Good example of that there. Also talked a little bit about what might be done to Silverdale Way to maybe help make it a little bit more user-friendly for the pedestrian, and just some different concepts there, just kind of brainstorming at this point. And then we had a closeout session and an overview of the concepts, and wrapped it up. And we got some really good responses. Some of the big ideas that came out of that were trail-oriented development, using Clear Creek as a green corridor, east-west connectors, like I said, connecting with bike paths through Clear Creek, connecting the mall, the hospital, YMCA, Old Town, and using the main roads for the bigger A to B multimodal connections. Waterfront as a destination, talked about a boardwalk possibly, continuous trail connection from Clear Creek, future walk-on ferry in Old Town, key parks and focal points, and community hubs, third spaces, public realm investments. So a lot of different strategies we talked about there. And let's see. So I'd like to go back and I wanted to note that Commissioner Hampton and Commissioner Shattuck both attended that workshop. And we got some really good feedback from a lot of the community and a lot of people that went there. The commissioner was really pleased, and I didn't know if you wanted to add anything or comment on your experiences there at that workshop.
No, my big takeaway was just excitement for what Silverdale could be, mm-hmm. and pulling together a diverse group the way the staff did, pulling those ideas out, just get excited about what a hub the little bird could be. So that was great.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, I was mainly attending in my professional capacity as staff at the health district. And I'll also say that, you know, it was really that roll up your sleeves type work. I'm talking, they handed you a glue stick and they said, where do you want to see this thing? So it was a really great, it was organized in the way of, you know, high lofty ideas into those concrete, where is this feasible? And so really looking forward to seeing the outcome of that.
Yeah, thank you for that feedback. It's very similar to what we heard from a lot of other participants. So thank you. Thank you for being there. Next steps, in July and August, we're furthering the development of those concepts. Our consultants are hard at work fine-tuning those, looking at the trail-oriented development again, priority streets and connectivity, concepts of mixed-use development, and catalyst sites like the Kitsap Mall. We had a Kitsap Mall representative there who was very excited about the possibility of redeveloping that into a more active mixed-use development. So we're hoping to further those conversations and see if we can make something happen there, because it could be a real catalyst for Silverdale. Also looking at strategies for public investments, such as little pocket parks and third spaces, community gathering places. And then in late August, we'll have public workshop number two. That's currently scheduled to be in person to share the concepts and get feedback from them. And then come back with a stakeholder workshop in mid to late September. That's currently scheduled to be virtual, but there's been some concern that we should probably do that in person. So we're going to look at to see if we can make that happen in person. And again, that workshop will be to discuss the expanded concepts, fine-tune them even further, and talk about implementation strategies, and then begin talking about design standards and building a framework for that. And then in November, we hope to have an 80% draft that we can share with you and also share with BSRC to supplement that center's application. So the timeline, I just kind of went through that already, but this summer we're doing the workshops. In the fall, we'll have a draft plan and start with some draft guidelines and implementation strategies. And then this next winter, early, probably in the first quarter of next year, we'll look at having a final plan and final design guidelines to adopt into the comp plan. So those will come to you in the form of hearings and deliberations and the whole long process, very similar to what Heather outlined for the Year of the Rural. And that is it. I hope you have questions.
Thanks again for the presentation. In the community engagement plan, I was very happy to see that you all are prioritizing inclusive engagement, working with community partners like Kitsap Community Resources and Kitsap Immigrant Assistance Center, IAC. And I would just recommend or encourage, if you are doing workshop two and also bringing together community organizations, to go through that same kind of design process if possible. I just thought it was so tangible and fun and creative, and I could see that being really something our community partners would be interested in engaging in.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll touch on it, but we also want to build on it at that next session too. So we started from scratch, and now we have to like take the next step to move it forward, but I can see certainly maybe a brief on that.
Yeah, or even like some type of mechanism to even vet or like build off of. Yeah,
yeah. Good comment. Thank you.
Where is the number, the estimate for 46.2 activity units by 2044 coming from? Is that with this?
That's coming from our analysis of the newly adopted zoning for that area, what's allowed there. What's allowed is actually quite a bit more than that, but we're taking a midpoint, you know, based on a kind of a market factor and a reality check that we're not going to max it out, but we believe that we can hit that 45 pretty easily if we can get this plan rolling and get the incentives going and get the excitement and the mall on board to start building some mixed use and bringing some homes in there, make it in a more 24/7 mixed use development and a lot of transit oriented development too, so it's a little less car centric. So we believe we have the planning tools and certainly the capacity is there to do it. So we just have to provide the incentives to incentivize the developers to build it. We can't build it, but we can provide the incentives to make it happen, hopefully.
Who's the number one employer in Silverdale?
Probably the hospital would be my guess.
Great and exciting presentation, Jim. This may be just for something looking forward for our future meetings. Like I like the comment, your comment about 46 activity units. I'm not really good at visualizing, like, so maybe if there's a possibility, I don't know how you can do this without doing too much research, but kind of explaining to me what that another place that I can drive to where would basically be 46 activity units. So I know what I'm kind of envisioning, like a place that's kind of doing well that's like, oh, it's, you know,
that's
40 to 50 or something like that.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's kind of an abstract just to talk about a number, but if you see a picture of something, that goes a long way. So yeah. I'll make sure I bring something to you.
Thank you.
What do you think Paulsbo would be?
Gosh, I don't know.
Other questions? I thank you for the presentation. It looks like you're doing a very nice job in outreach. One thing I didn't hear emphasized is the use of the Central Kitsap Community Council. Are you using them? How can you make sure that they're a participant in this process?
Yeah, we actually had 17 members of, not 17 members, I'm sorry. We had a CKCC subcommittee that was put together by the Central Kitsap Community Council for specifically to talk about Silverdale planning. They were also involved in the comprehensive plan update, and now we've included them in the Silverdale Center plan, and we've added on to that. So there's quite a few representatives from CKCC.
You should take credit for that.
What's that?
You should take credit for that.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions, comments? Yes, ma'am.
This may be way off, but the idea of a foot ferry between Silverdale and Bremerton is, I'm curious who the demographic is that's using that or, like, what the thought is behind that. You said there's a lot of people that are interested in it. Is that part of Silverdale as a transit hub as well?
Yes. And Old Town is in the center, so it would be part of that transit hub. I mean, there's a new transit center up by the hospital now. There could be some really good pedestrian and other connections between there and the ferry in Old Town. Like I said, Kitsap Transit is currently doing a feasibility study to see if that's a viable option for them to do that. And the fact that that Old Town area is now included in the regional center makes it eligible for federal transportation dollars, not just for us, but also for transit to help help that project along. So there's some excitement about it right now. I know the Navy Housing, particularly, they're interested in that as a potential vehicle for, you know, people to commute on. The hospital district as well is also interested in better transit connections. So,
And they've done two demonstration runs, Blackberry Festival, the last 2 years. They've run the ferry back and forth Silverdale to Bremerton. And they're running, the numbers were like 1,200 to 1,800 passengers over the weekend.
Yeah, it's great.
So the numbers are there. Other questions for them? Excellent brief. Thank you, Jim.
You bet. Thank you. If you have any questions, feel free to let me know, and we'll make sure we include your requests into our work plan.
That brings us to the second general comment period. Do we have any comments online?
We do.
Mr. Palmer? Mr. Palmer? Now I see zero. Mr. Palmer, can you hear us?
I can. I can hear you. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Just a couple of comments, one on the Year of the Rural. It didn't seem like Heather was talking much about what specific things they were doing for the rural landowners and farmers. There's a coalition that's been formed of rural business owners, and I didn't hear any mention of contact with them or what they were trying to achieve along with staff. And switching from that topic to the Silverdale plan, listening to the presentation, the term sustainable design was used. Big problem I have with that is nobody ever defines what sustainable design, what constitutes sustainable design. For example, we have wood frame houses that were built in the 1700s in the northeastern part of United States that are still standing and still usable. I call that sustainable. Going around the world, we've got monuments, and not the least of which are the Giza pyramids, and pyramids in Central America and South America that have been around for thousands of years. So I call that sustainable. So I don't know what is that term applied to Silverdale really means. Also, I haven't followed that process in great detail, but if they don't solve the traffic problem in Gorst and where Highway 3 goes down to Sinclair Inlet, if they don't solve that, they've got a real problem in Silverdale, and we face that, our commuters face that every single day, starting about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And I can't see that you can have a Silverdale plan that doesn't include solving that problem. One last comment about Silverdale. In the 1980s, there was a partnership between the landowners and the county to develop Silverdale. The landowners at that time decided that they would tax themselves in ULID districts for roads and water and sewer because they had something to gain. But what do the landowners there have now to gain? Yes, you can have new developers come in from outside of Kitsap County with the money to do projects, but you're not getting the kind of participation from landowners and others in the development of Silverdale. I have a lot more to say, but I think I'll leave it at that right now.
Thank you very much. Any other general comments? With that, I'll close the general comment period, which opens up for the good of the order. I have one. Thank you, Kathy, for coming and viewing our session. We look forward to meeting you in person.
Thank you.
Do you have any comments?
I do not.
Hearing no further comments, I declare this meeting adjourned.